Well, welcome everybody to ITE Module 8, ITE 1 even, Module 8, Part 2. We got about halfway through last week, and we're talking about all network sorts of good gear. So, as usual, and I hope you did all your swatting up, I'm going to go back through that lovely module on printers with a quick quiz. So if you can open up your chat windows, if you've not already got them open, we'll do the quiz first. So, without any further ado, which technology is used by dot matrix printers? Is it A, digital drop, B, electrostatic spray, C, electrophotographic, D, ink melting, or E, impact? All right, and the correct answer was E, impact. So somebody got that. I think that might have been...
It was Saprita. Well done, Saprita.
Yes. Okay, question two. Which phase of the laser printing process includes applying toner to a late image? Is it A, cleaning, B, conditioning, C, developing, D, fusing, E, transferring, or F, writing? That one right, that's good. Yep, excellent, it is, it's developing. Okay, next question. Alright, this is one of those ones where you got to pick three, so what I'll do is yes, no. What are three disadvantages of impact printers? So yes, no. Do they have expensive consumables? Yes, no. No, that's correct. That's good. Do they have high power consumption? That's correct. Do they have limited colour capability? Yeah, that's correct. Noisy printing? Are they noisy? That's an easy one, isn't it? Impact, it's going to sound noisy, I think. Okay, are they slow? Yeah, they are, that's right. Well done, okay. Doing better this time. Okay, next question. Which type of printer melts ink and sprays it through a nozzle onto a drum to transfer an image onto the paper? Is it A, fusion ink, B, impact, C, inkjet, D, laser, or E, solid ink? Okay, for those who got E, you're correct. It is solid ink. Okay, and that's the key there is it melts the ink. Okay, so it starts out as a solid and then it's melted before it's sprayed through the nozzle onto the drum. Okay. Next question, which type of printing processes use the solid sheets of ink that change directly to gas when the printhead heats the ink? Is it A, dye sublimation, B, impact, C, inkjet, or D, laser? Well, we're doing a lot better this time. That's good. That's correct. It is A. It's that dye sublimation. Okay, next one. Which peripheral is used to convert paper documents into electronic files? Is it A, a digital reader, B, a printer, C, a projector, or D, a scanner?
Or E, a captive sighted person.
Oh, I'll go with E, Anita.
Yeah, and it is D, it's a scanner. All right, next question. How is the speed of a laser printer measured? Is it in dots per minute, A, B, pages per minute, C, pixels per second, or D, pages per second? Oh, we're all over the place there. The speed of a laser printer is measured in pages per minute, which is B. Somebody went, oops. Okay, that's good. You all did a little bit better this week. That was good.
I think they all did right. A lot better this week, actually.
Yes, we did. Yes, that's right.
Now, just something I wanted to explain to people. I was just going to say that we don't do all of the chapters in ITE 1. I don't think we do. We don't do all the chapters in ITE 1, do they? There's only certain modules.
No, we pick out towards the end of ITE, there's a couple there, and we sort of don't go back through because they do things like advanced printers, and we don't bother with that. And there's another one on advanced mobile devices. So it's just so many chapters, so we cut down a bit on that. So you may end up with actually one or two questions in the exam that you think, oh, we didn't do that in class. You need to read through the modules anyway just to make sure you've, you know, got it in your brain, because you might get one of those from the missing chapters.
So I have a question about that. Do we do the assignments through those chapters as well?
No. I'll let you know which ones they are as well as we get closer. But yeah, no, you don't have to do the assignments either. Isn't that good, eh? Okay, so, but yeah, as we get up there, I'll let you know which ones we're going to miss. There's only two that we miss, so, so you don't have 16, you've got 14.
I thought there was some, we don't do the one on being a bench technician either.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And then I think it was 12 and 14 we dropped. And then the other thing I remember was apparently the 1 to 10 exam is critically important, but the 11 to 16 isn't. We'll have to check that with Ian. Because the final's actually split in half for ITE 1. There's actually a 1 to 10 and then there's an 11 to 16. And we need to check out whether you need to do 11 to 16 and what the rules are for that, because I have a feeling you don't need to do 11 to 16. But convince yourself that you do, because I might be wrong, okay? So I've got to check that.
Yes.
Actually, I'm going to say that you were saying that we didn't have to. You'd asked somebody a little while ago, but ask again if you're not sure.
Well, the thing is, it's not a bad idea to do it anyway. And then if it's not, I mean, we will check it out. But if it's not required, it doesn't matter. The mark's not going to matter. It's just for your own advantage then, you know, to see how you go with it. But we'll get back to you on that. Watch this space.
It's good practice for A+ anyway, so yeah, either way.
That's right, yeah, exactly. And yeah, exactly. Good idea.
The other thing to keep in mind is that whilst an exam can be a little bit stressful and nail-biting, it doesn't have to be. I'm one of these people that if I know the subject material well, I find exams fun. No, put down the phone. Don't call those people in their little white coats. But yeah, I do actually enjoy the challenge of an exam.
They're coming to take him away, ha ha.
I'll just hide. I'll take Jenny instead.
We've got one of the students here saying they've got a nice warm white jacket for him. All right, so last week, as I say, we're talking all about networking and different types of cabling, and so I'm sure you all the full quid on that, so to speak. There's a real Aussie, old Aussie slang. We don't have quids anymore. You're going to ask me what a quid is now, aren't you? It was an old pound note. In Australia, we used to have pounds, shillings and pence till 1962, I believe.
1966. 14th of January.
Right. 1966. So, yeah. 40, yeah, we used to sing that song. And now we have dollars and cents. So, I'm showing my age.
And Jenny just said some people still don't have any sense.
All right. Serious now, folks. All right, so now we're talking about some of the architectures of networks, or the network architecture and network topologies. Basically, what I'm talking about there is how we build up a network, how we design it. So you need to be able to know how to design your network so that it's a logical network, and we refer to the network architecture or the network topology. When we're talking about local area network topologies, we have both a physical and a logical. Okay? Now, I'm not going to do it, Kerry.
When I was young, everything was so logical. See, I didn't do the physical song.
No. So your local area network architecture is built around a topology, and it comprises of all the components that make up the actual structure of your communication system within the network. That includes things like your hardware, your software, your protocols, and your sequence of operation. So when we talk about the physical topology, we're looking at things like your hardware, your computers, your printers, and all of your devices that are connected to your network. So when we talk about a logical topology, we're just talking about how the hosts on that network, how they communicate and access the different mediums on the network.
And it's worth pointing out here, and Geraldine will point it out further down the page, that the logical topology does not necessarily match the physical topology. Otherwise, we wouldn't have two different ones. But you have to say it anyway.
Exactly. So there's a number of ways we describe the actual physical topology of your network. And I'll just go through them one by one. We've got the bus topology. So think about like a bus. You've got each computer connected to through a common cable, and you've got them each connecting from one computer to next. So it's like a bus going along the road sort of thing.
I was just going to say, example of a bus topology would be ThinNet 10Base2, which is 50-ohm coax, a run of 50-ohm coax. It has BNC connectors, if you've seen those on some really old video players and stuff. They're the ones that you sort of, they've got a Bainet-Nielsen connector, and you push them on and then you twist the little spinny, grippy thing. And it locks on, like it actually locks.
That's techno speak, isn't it? That's
I don't know what it's actually supposed to be called. The retaining, rotating, yes.
Thingy,
yeah. It's like the Tunker. It's like the Tunker on an RJ45. It's a Tunker. I mean, it's probably a retaining lug, but I call it a Tunker because when you plug them in, they go Tunk. So, yeah, you've got BNC connectors. You have a T-piece that goes between each BNC connector, and the T-piece obviously has it has two BNC males, one on either end, and it has a female on the bottom, so it's in the shape of a T. Or a horizontal stroke with a vertical down bar, and you actually plug the female connector onto the male connector that sticks out the back of the computer, and then you plug the two female ends of the T-piece onto the two cables, and then at the end of the buses there is actually a 50-ohm terminating resistor to quash cable reflections and impedance mismatches, and you have a terminator on each end.
Go and do the terminator, go on.
Hasta la vista, little network packet. Yeah, okay, so you have that on either end, and that actually quashes the reflection so that you don't get signal reflection coming straight back down the coax. And one break in the cable, and it's all over Red Rover.
Red Rover, yeah.
Yeah, and the network just goes down like a... like the world economy. So make sure you have
and
both ends.
And the network goes down and down. Whoa, 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 whoa.
Oh,
and no
dear.
Packets come out here.
Moving on to more topologies and stuff.
That worked effectively. Okay, another type of topology is a ring topology, as it sounds. The packets go round and round, whoa, whoa, whoa. Yes, so it's like a physical ring or circle. And it has no beginning, it has no end. On that topology, you can depend. Okay, so because it's one ring, you don't need a terminator. It's got a formatted frame that, if you think about it, a frame going around, we call that frame a token, travels around the ring, and it picks up messages at each host. So if that host wants to give it data, it adds data to that frame, and it goes to the destination. And it continues round the ring until the frame stops at the host with the destination address.
Just a small message from our sponsors. If you're remotely interested in token ring networks, why don't you consider downloading the Thursday chat on the subject? There's an extra discussion on token ring in the 2007 Thursday chats folder. It's free and available to download now if you're at all interested in token ring. Warning, we do not warrant the content of any of these Thursday chats and hope they will prove useful, but if they don't, kill your dog or shoot your girlfriend. We cannot be held responsible.
Oh dear. How am I supposed to keep going on like that after that?
I better do the start apology then, shall I?
Okay. Better.
Okay, Geraldine's having a holiday soon, people. It'll be all right.
I think I need one after that.
Okay, a start apology is where you have a central hub and you connect all of the... each cable runs individually to each workstation, such as a 10-base T cable or 100-base T, and they all connect to a central hub or a central switch. And then the cables branch out from a star. They are good because if one link to one computer fails, the rest of them continue to function. However, if the device at the centre of the star fails, you're in trouble. And later on I will talk about, if we don't cover it in the notes, why a hub actually is a physical star but a logical bus. So we'll get to that later maybe.
All right, so another topology is the hierarchical or sometimes referred to as an extended star topology. So if you have in a star network, you've got an additional networking device that's actually connected to the main networking device. So for example, you could have a network cable connected to a hub and then several other hubs that connect to the first hub. You can also find these types of networks in your large corporate environments. So you've got things sort of connected to the main networking device.
Or you can go to my house.
The next one is a mesh topology, and that connects all your devices to each other. They all mesh together, so to speak. And we call it that when you've got each of the devices on the network connected to every other device on the network. So they're quite good because if you've got a failure somewhere in one of the devices, it's not going to affect the rest of the network. So, and it's usually used in larger sort of wide area networks and ones that interconnect through local area networks. Okay. So that's the physical topologies. Now the logical topologies, we've got the two most common ones are the broadcast and also the token passing. So in a broadcast topology, you've got each host addresses, that's sort of talking about things either data that's particular to a host or all connected to all of the hosts on the network. And there's no particular order that the hosts need to follow to use the network. It's first come, first served basis. Okay. Token passing controls the network access, and as it sounds, it does that by passing a small electronic token, and it passes that token on to each of the hosts. When the host receives the token, it then sends the data on the network. And if the host has no data to send, it then passes the token to the next host, and on ad infinitum.
Just an interesting point, which I don't think is covered in the notes, but the first implementations of token ring actually had one token that travelled around clockwise, and it was discovered that if the ring broke, you would actually have a problem where you would actually lose connectivity and there would be machines that would not be able to communicate because the token wouldn't make it all the way around the ring. So in future implementations of token ring, they actually had two tokens, one running around clockwise and one running around anti-clockwise. And that way you can actually detect a break in the ring by looking at the responses that come back from the MAUIs, the media MAU, Media Access Units, you could actually figure out where the break was in the ring. And in fact, if you're wiring up FDDI, which is Fiber Distributed Data Interface, it is actually a dual ring token system to guarantee priority and bandwidth and stuff. Oh, shut up now. I didn't say it would. Jenny just said it wouldn't last.
Okay, Ethernet. Now, the Ethernet architecture is based on the IEEE 802.3 standard. That is IEEE 802.3 standard, IEEE 802.3 standard. That's in your test. And that standard specifies that a network uses the carrier sense multiple access with collision detection, and you've probably heard of that, CSMA/CD access control method. And in that method, the hosts access the network using the first-come, first-served broadcast topology method when they want to transmit their data.
Does it go into details on that, or?
I'll just have a look. No, not much.
I'll quickly whip through that because it's important.
Yeah.
I always remember it as CSMACT, just because it's a silly word, and it reminds CSMACD, carrier sense multiple access with collision detection. Basically, the protocol works like a dinner party, a very well-organized dinner party, or perhaps a meeting. If everybody is sitting around a table and a person wishes to speak, you first listen for silence. If you hear silence, you start talking.
It's golden.
Unless you're Jenny and you just talk anyway. So you start talking, and if somebody else starts talking at the same time, you both stop talking and you wait a random amount of time before one of you starts talking again. And the random amount of time is different for the two people that are waiting, and hopefully one person will start talking and the other person will stay quiet. And that's why we call it carrier sense, because we're listening for silence of media. We're listening for multiple access, because there's multiple users on the one segment. And the collision detection is, if you're not Jenny, you listen for somebody else who's not talking, and if they're not talking, no, I'm just having a show. If somebody is talking, you stop talking. So that's how carrier sense multiple access with collision detection works. And it's very important to understand that, because when you get onto the advanced CCNA stuff, if you're studying that, you'll get into understanding collision zones, and we understand when the collisions can happen, the probability of them happening, and what sort of effect on network degradation they're likely to have. Okay.
Okay. Another terminology that we need to talk about is FDDI, and it's a type of token ring network. So you've got it's often used to connect larger sort of buildings together. Runs on fibre optics, so you get nice high speeds out of it, and it runs at 100 megabits per second on a dual ring topology. And you have like the outer ring, and we refer to that as the primary ring, and the inner ring, which we talk about as the secondary ring. Normally you've got your traffic flowing around your primary ring, but it's got a backup if there's a failure there, and the data automatically will go back and use the secondary ring in the opposite direction. It supports a maximum of 500 computers per ring, so really good for large networks.
And the new Australian broadband network will probably be using FDDI, because they're looking at bringing 100 megabits per second to most houses. So that's...
Won't that be nice?
If it happens.
If it happens, yes.
Well, yeah. What occurs to me is, if we're going to bring 100 megabits to each house and everybody's going to have 100 megabit, what sort of pipe are we going to actually have... What sort of pipe are we going to have to the States? I mean, we're going to have terabits of bandwidth to the States, because, I mean, let's face it, you don't go to www.facebook.com.au or google.com.au still redirects to a server over on akamai.net. So I don't know how they're going to pull this off, to be honest. I think they've got ambitions that perhaps they may not completely realise.
True. Okay, so the total distance of the cable rings that it can support is 100 kilometres, quite a large area. If you're in miles, 62 miles, and you can, well, it needs to have a repeater, and a repeater actually just regenerates the signal, and that's required every 2K or 1.2 roughly miles along that network. More recent use has been the fast Ethernet, which has come in. Okay, just scrolling down here to see what we need to cover. Okay.
Anybody got any questions?
Yeah, good idea. There's just a whole lot of stuff there in the notes about the different standards organisations.
Ah, well, I could summarise that pretty quickly, actually.
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. There's ISO, which is the International Standards Organisation, and there's OSI, which is the Open Standards Interconnect, and one's backwards and one's forward. There's the IEEE, which is the International Electronic Engineers, Electricians and Engineers. Yeah, that's them. And then there's the EIA, which is the Electronics Industry Association, and then there's
EIO,
yeah, and then there's the TIA, which is the Telecommunications Industry Association or something. Yeah, that's right. And so they're all the different organisational standards of people, and they come up with all the different standards for the different networking. IEEE does the 802 standards. The ITUT, which is the International Telecommunications Union of something or other of telephony, but it's Swiss, which is why the letters don't match up. Their letters don't match up with their chocolate rocks, so go figure. The difference between star and extended star, which was explained earlier, you must have missed that one or had an internet wobble. An extended star is where you connect multiple stars together by their points. It's a bit like the hierarchical topology, but you actually connect multiple hubs together or multiple switches together by their uplinks by one of the uplink ports or one of the ports. So you actually have multiple stars connected together. There was something else I was going to say. Oh, yes, if you have a hub, and a hub, as I said, is a multi-port repeater, and you actually connect a whole stack of machines to a hub, what you actually have is a physical star, but you actually have a logical bus. Because it's a hub, every packet is seen by every other machine on the hub, therefore it exists as one collision zone, therefore it's actually a logical bus, but a physical star. If you replace the hub with a switch, it becomes a logical star and a physical star.
Was there any other question there before we move on?
Okay. Not here.
Okay, thank you.
You did networking too, so you should be pretty clued up on this, although hopefully this is making that a little bit clearer.
All right, so we've touched a little bit on Ethernet. The IEEE 802.3 standard defines the physical implementations that support Ethernet, and I think Kerry touched a little bit on this before, but I'll just go through and make sure we've got it all covered. Ethernet, when we're talking about 10 base T, is an Ethernet technology that uses a star topology. It has 10 base T refers to the fact that it's got a speed of 10 megabits per second. So the 10, obviously, talking about the speed. Base, when we talk about the base, it represents the baseband transmission. So we're talking about the entire bandwidth of the cable in this scenario, and the type of signal that you're getting. And the T actually represents, if we're just breaking it down into bits, the twisted pair copper cabling, so 10 base T.
Okay, I was just had a question.
Yep.
See how many people were not paying attention. But if baseband means we're using the entire bandwidth of the cable, what does broadband mean? Oh, I've got you all thinking now, haven't I? All right, I'll put you out of your misery. Broadband actually means that it uses a percentage of the bandwidth of the cable, but it doesn't use the entire bandwidth of the cable. What actually happens in broadband is you actually have a number of carrier signals, and you modulate the data on the carrier signals. So, and depending on the line characteristics and the noise characteristics of the analog phone line, the DSLAM, and your ADSL modem actually pick the specific set of frequencies that they're going to use that actually have the lowest noise on the line. So there are 16 frequencies they could pick. It picks 8 of those 16 and uses the most optimal ones. And this is actually called training to the line conditions. Broadband actually uses the frequencies between 16 kilohertz and 20 megahertz, whereas the voice system uses the frequencies between 0 and 16 kilohertz, which is why you have a low-pass filter on your phones so that you can filter out everything below 16 kilohertz and keep the broadband noise off your phones. This is if you're using ADSL or DSL.
Any questions on that before we move on?
I just had a question. So no system except for fiber optic would be the baseband system at all, right, then?
No. Ethernet is baseband. Ethernet is baseband. Anything that has base in its name, so 10 base T, 100 base T, 10 base 2, 10 base 5, they use the entire cable bandwidth for their transmissions. In other words, if you're using baseband, you have one carrier signal, and you have information modulated on that carrier. Whereas if you have a broadband signal, you have multiple carriers, and we use what we call quadrature amplitude modulation. Don't ask. Just really don't. But basically, you have multiple carriers at different frequencies, and you can actually multiplex more than one bit per line transition. But this is really heavy voodoo stuff that we don't cover in these courses. So what you end up with is baseband, you're using the whole transmission bandwidth, and broadband, you're using sections of the transmission bandwidth. I believe fiber is baseband because you are actually modulating either an infrared light source or a red light source, or you're modulating a laser. But because the transitions can be done so quickly, there is only one carrier. Maybe that's a bit clearer, maybe not.
Okay, well, we'll see. So in my house, when I'm doing my Ethernet, whatever, doing what I do, my Ethernet transmission to the cable box is a baseband transmission. Then when I get to my cable, it shares with my television and my cable internet, so that is broadband.
That is correct. And interestingly enough, when you go on to wireless, because it actually uses spread spectrum, you also go back onto broadband for your wireless, because the actual channel range, channel 1 is actually 2.412 gigahertz, but it's actually, I think, about 20 megahertz wide. So you actually go back onto broadband if you're on wireless as well. And the reason we do that is because of the multiplexing that goes on with the wideband stuff on the wireless. You can theoretically have two wireless access points operating on the same channel, and they won't wipe each other out completely.
Okay, right on. Thank you.
Gary. All right, so something you will get in your exam. I know there's some questions on advantages and disadvantages. So if we're talking about the advantages of 10 base T, it's fairly inexpensive. You've got thin cables, nice flexible cables, so that makes it, you know, when they've got to install, it makes that a little bit easier. And it's easily upgradable. When we talk about the disadvantages, the maximum length you can get for 10 base T's is 100 metres, so it's a shorter distance, or 328 feet. Please learn these measurements because they are in a test. And it's also susceptible to EMI. You all remember what EMI is? Anyone want to tell me?
It's a record company.
Electromagnetic interference.
That's correct.
I was also just going to mention memory aid. 10 base T and 100 base T, you can actually remember that 100 base T is 100 metres long, is your maximum length, so that might help you remember it.
Yeah, I seem to remember it was in the test, so...
Yeah, it was.
Heads up there. Mm. Okay, now fast Ethernet, we talked about a little while ago, just touched on. It's, as it sounds, it's got a higher bandwidth demands, so it's suitable for, you know, things like streaming audio and that type of thing, where you've got to have higher data transfer, and certainly, you know, much more commonly used now. Also, you've got 100 base TX, and that's faster than 10 base T, and theoretically got a bandwidth of about 100 megabits per second. The advantages of 100 base TX, you'd have transfer rates 10 times faster than 10 base T. Uses twisted pair cabling, so again, it's fairly inexpensive, easily installed. The disadvantage, I guess, is the maximum length, again, is the 100 metres or 328 feet, and it's susceptible, again, to EMI. 1000 base T, more commonly known as gigabit Ethernet. It's supports, as it sounds, data transfer rates at about 1 gigabits per second, and it's 10 times faster, again, than fast Ethernet. And when you're talking about Ethernet, obviously it's 100 times faster. So you're getting much more, you know, better things, like when you've got bandwidth intensive things. Live video, for one, would be one. Again, its disadvantage is it's only 100 metres for the segment. Susceptible, again, to interference. More things like your network interface cards, switches, and that, more expensive. And you also need additional requirements. Then we come to fibre optics. Okay, fibre optics, 10 base FL, 100 base FX, 1000 base SX, and LX, they're all your fibre optic Ethernet technologies. Let me see what we need to tell you there. What else do we need to tell them about fibre optics, Gary?
Fibre optics. There's two types of fibre. There's single mode fibre.
Cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. There's two sorts of fibre, single mode fibre and multi mode fibre. Single mode, you actually use a laser. Or a pin diode actually generates the laser, and it's usually an infrared wavelength because they travel down the glass better. And a multimode fiber, you tend to use a visible light source which can actually bounce around inside the fiber. And in fact, in session A, we actually talked about the different angles of reflection and how you actually had to have a higher angle of refraction on the outside of the fiber than you did on the inside to cause the light to refract back inside the fiber. Hey, isn't it good we don't have that anymore? But you try explaining that to blind people, the angle of refraction. It's not cool. Those of you who've seen would know what refraction is, but those of you who haven't, good luck. And then you talk about how the light is bent back towards the normal, or whether it's bent away from the normal as the refractive index increases. Phew. Anyway, so single mode fiber sends the laser straight down the middle of the fiber, and it can go longer distances. Fiber, as we've said in Discovery, is not susceptible to electromagnetic interference because it works on a light source. The speeds of fiber are increasing quite exponentially as the technology improves, and you can often run like 100 fibers in a cable that's maybe or as round as your arm. And given the fact that each conversation can go on two fibers, basically a fiber including its cladding, I'm just trying to think what it'd be about as round as. The fibre itself is about the roundness of a human hair, but the actual cladding around it makes it wider. So it's probably about as wide as 14-pound fishing line. Maybe, yeah, that's about as thick as a single fibre. And then you actually put the fibre down a jacket and you coat it, you wrap it in this gooey stuff, which sort of protects it. It's sort of like this grease. And then on the outside of it, it's got Kevlar to strengthen the fibre cable. And Kevlar is the stuff that's used in bulletproof vests. And then on the outside of that, you actually have a plastic shield that keeps stuff out of the fibre optic cable. That's the advantage of fibre. You can run like 100, 200, 300 fibres down one cable, and then you only have to light up the fibres that are actually in use, so you can actually bring bandwidth on demand when you need it.
Okay. Oh, Pratik, you wanted to know the difference between star and extended star.
Oh, I did that. I did that. Remember I did that
you
earlier?
Did. Yeah. 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 Oh, maybe I've got the wrong question.
Maybe.
Oh, hang on. Oh, yeah, there's one further down. Oh, just a comment, yeah. We have a read in physics.
Yeah, she's read it in physics, yeah. But the question is, did you understand it? Because it's a pretty complex concept. I don't know, I mean, I do understand it, but I've never had sight, but it took me a long time to understand the concept of refraction and why it would happen.
Interesting. Oh, good. It was understood, that's good. Okay, all right, so that's really good explanation on that. And, all right, so it brings us down to wireless Ethernet standards. Please learn these standards because you're going to get them in your test. IEEE 802.11 is the standard that refers to the connections for wireless networks. So, all right, we'll go through. There's a few of them. There's 802.11A, you know, 802B and so on. So I'll just go through them individually. 802.11A, it allows LANs to get data rates of about 54 megabits per second, operates in the 5 gigahertz radio frequency range, and has a maximum range of 150 feet or 45.7 meters. 802.11B operates in the 2.4 gigahertz frequency and has a rate of 11 megabits per second and works at a range of 91 meters or 300 feet. Now you won't get specifically the ranges in your exam meters per feet of all these, but you will maybe get questions on the different standards and what they are. 802.11G gives you a maximum speed 54 megabits per second and works in the 2.4 gigahertz range. It's backward compatible with 802.11B and SA range of 91 meters. Newer wireless standard is 802.11N and has a bandwidth of 540 megabits per second, operates in either 2.4 gigahertz or 5 gigahertz frequency, and has a range of 250 meters. And there are questions in your test on those, so but not the specifics of the distances there. Okay, now we come to the TCP/IP and OSI. Kerry will love this bit. Kerry, I'm going to swing over to you because this is your baby, isn't it?
The OSI reference model and I. Yeah.
And TCP/IP. I'll let you do it.
All right. The TCP/IP reference model came out before the OSI reference model. It has four layers. It has the network access layer, it has the network layer, it has the transport layer, and it has the applications layer. The network access layer is responsible for getting packets on and off the medium and getting packets from one end of the medium to the other. It basically covers the first two layers of the OSI reference model. So you end up with the physical layer and the data link layer covered by the network access layer. You then have the network layer, which concerns itself with source and destination IP addresses and addressing. And that is similar to the network layer in the OSI Open Systems Interconnect model. You then have the transport layer, which concerns itself with end-to-end reliability, so retransmission, error detection, and fault condition stuff. And that is the same as the transport layer in the TCP/IP model. Then the application layer of the TCP/IP model basically encompasses the session, presentation, and application layers of the OSI reference model. The session, well, actually, in the transport layer of the TCP model, you've also got some of the elements of the session layer. We won't go too much into that. The session layer is the one that is responsible for the opening and closing of dialogues and the maintenance of a session. Presentation is responsible for character set conversions and the format of the data, so whether you're using ASCII or EBCDIC. And application is responsible for the communications between the application and the networking model. Oh dear. I think the scary thing about that was I just went through all of that and I didn't really even think about it much. I think I might have done OSI just a bit too much.
Okay, now that's good. All right, so I thought that was easier for you to go through that than go through the waffle in the notes, because it's much more succinct. All right, some of your devices on your network, you've all using modems, I guess, and anyone want to have a go at telling me what a modem does? Okay, go for it.
No, either you've missed the go for it or your button needs to be pressed.
Hmm. My button needs to be pressed. Is that better?
That's better.
I hate this thing. Anyway, a modem modulates and demodulates signals. It turns digital into analog and vice versa so that it can go over the phone lines and you can get your internet.
Hmm. That's a silly joke I once told was, how did the computer get rid of the charging army? It modem down. Okay, it was a bad joke. But... But yes, that is an excellent description of a modem, and it's designed to work over analog telephone lines at speeds up to 56 kilobits per second would be about the only thing I'd add there. And there are actually, ISDN actually uses terminal adapters, which are not actually modems because it's actually a digital circuit. There's also ADSL modems, which are used on your DSL, which also works over standard copper pairs, and they can do speeds up to about, I think 16 or 32 megabits is about the highest you get ADSL 2. 24 is the highest you can get ADSL 2 plus up to at this stage. And we're really starting to approach the limits of the analog cabling that runs from the exchange to the local loop. Once we go... if you do Discovery, I'll talk about it there. Or if you download the TCP/IP book, I won't need to explain it to you.
Okay, so... thank you, Grace. That was a good explanation. So the modems actually communicate with each other using audio tone signals, and that means the modems duplicate the dialing characteristics like you've got on a telephone. If we talk about the public telephone system, when we're using that to communication, we've all heard of dial-up networking. It creates, when you're using dial-up networking, you have a point-to-point protocol, PPP, connection between two computers over the phone line. After the connection's been established, you get like a handshaking sequence, okay? So you've got the handshake between the two modems and the computers, and there's a short, if we look at that, the handshaking sequence, is you have a series of short communications that occur between the two systems.
Who has heard a modem handshake? Yeah, that's what I go. Or something similar. And it's, you often hear it on movies, you know, I'm just about to hack into the NASA mainframe, and he dials up a modem.
Yeah
right.
Yeah, it sounds good though, doesn't it? When they say these things, oh, it sounds very techy.
And I just like, look, I'm not trying to, I'm just mentioning something here, Prateep. I'm not trying to cut you out on the transport protocol, but we do have to get through this stuff in ITE. We will come back to it in CCNA possibly. But seriously, get into that book and it will tell you all about the transport protocol big time.
It'll tell you more than you ever wanted to know.
Communicate with a modem by voice.
Yes, you can. In fact, I used to whistle at them. Hello, Greg. Whistle the 880 cycles per second to con the 14-4s into continuing the negotiation. I may have had a bit of a strange childhood.
Oh, yes.
They're just offering to call the psychiatric people for me. Are you just sticky beaking, Greg, or is there something we can help you with? Is something broken horribly?
I'm just listening in.
Oh, cool. You're welcome. You're always welcome. But, I mean, obviously, if there is something that's broken, do make sure you interject and let us know.
Yes. I'm just trying to switch over to Perth time.
Oh, righto. Fair enough.
So when are you coming out here, Greg?
That is up to the intricacies of the Australian Immigration Service.
Oh, I see. Yes.
So never then. I'm joking.
They've hired me, but now they have to push all the paper around to get me and my family approved to arrive. We just got the quotes on how much it's going to cost to move the family possessions to Perth.
Mm. I can imagine that would not be a inexpensive exercise.
It's actually less expensive to move to Perth than it is to move across the United States.
Is that right? Yeah.
Okay, and now just for so everybody knows, and I'm for those who don't know, I wouldn't call him mad. Oh, yes, I would. He's our Mad Daisy bloke. He does all sorts of things with Daisy and talking books, and he's a Mac wizard, and he does lots of things with his Mac, and a big proponent of voiceover, and generally a pretty cool bloke that fixes things on our web server and is in the middle of writing a library system, which I think you can all go check out at www.qcat.org/library. Is that right? I can't remember. And are they allowed to check it out? I think they are.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it's available now.
Yeah, you can all go check it out and download some Daisy books and have a listen to some Daisy books for free off the library system there, and see what you think of them. And you know, I don't know, feedback, I suppose, if you want.
You can request books to be made if they haven't been made into Daisy. You can fill out a little.
Oh, that's good to know.
I wish I would have had that when I was in school.
We have 32,000 books in the collection, so obviously we haven't made them all into Daisy.
Yeah, Daisy, I wish I had it when I was at school.
Back from that microphone.
Sorry, is that better?
Much better.
Much better. Yeah, go again, sorry.
Yeah, I wish I had, Daisy. Back in school I had cassettes and Braille, which was all good, but, you know, to find a certain thing was pretty challenging with, 14 cassette tapes per textbook.
This book contains up to 4 sides per cassette, and the thing you want is on side 7.
And good luck finding it.
And by the way, you have an open book test on it.
Oh, does anybody remember that old encyclopedia system where you actually put the right tape in and you pressed buttons and it sort of fast-forwarded to the entry you wanted in the encyclopedia?
Yes. Okay, well, you had that as well. I was going to ask you about that.
Gosh, no. Oh. Anything like that. I'm a dyslexic, so I use the talking book service quite a bit, and I remember open reel tapes with little slips of paper stuck into them.
Yeah, and I'd just like to make a point. We had a bit of a problem with this a couple of years ago. If you notice a spelling error on the QCAT website, don't post to the mailing list. Can you just please email us quietly and we'll fix it? It's not a problem, but sometimes some of the spelling is a little bit interesting, and if you see something, if you could just let us know, we'll get it fixed. But apart from that, the website is absolutely brilliant, and we really would like it to look top-notch. So if you do see something, let us know.
Yes, the spelling quietly. Is my rather erratic, dyslexic spelling style.
Who cares? His web design's excellent. We can fix the spelling.
It is excellent, yes. Okay. All right, we talked a little bit about ADSL a little while ago, I seem to recall. So I just want to talk a little bit about ADSL and DSL. Digital Subscriber Line means DSL, and it's an always-on technology. So you don't, when you're using it, obviously you don't need to be dialing up to use the internet. DSL uses your existing copper telephone lines, and it gives you high-speed data communication between end users and the telephone companies. Unfortunately, though, the bandwidth gets limited by the telephone companies along the lines, and with DSL, of course, you can use the phone and allow voice calls be placed while you're connected to the internet. It's got distance limitations. They designed the phone lines they used for DSL were originally designed to carry just your analog voice communications. So obviously you've got a limitation on the amount of or the length the signal can be sent. I think Kerry, you touched on splitters before, didn't you?
I did. I talked about the low-pass filters, and just a very brief point on those. There's two ways of doing it. You can either have a filter on each socket, and they are your little filters that you get from your electronics store or whatever, and they have usually three sockets. One is for the line, one is for the ADSL modem, and the other is for the phone. Don't get them wrong, or bad things happen, and yes, it does matter which ones you get right, so you've got to make sure you get the filters around the right way and get them on so that everything behaves itself. You want the phones on the phones, the line plugged into the phone line, and the modem plugged into the modem side of things. Or you can get a central splitter, which is where you actually split off the phone in the actual wiring of the house, and you have the phone section of the wiring, and you have an ADSL socket. And in fact, central splitters are much higher quality than those little crummy D-Link horrors that you get from your local electronics store. So if you are having trouble with dropouts because you are 4 kilometres from the exchange, it may be worth getting a central splitter installed and doing it properly, rather than having splitters on each socket. If you do have splitters on each socket, however, and you are using ADSL 2+, you should have, if possible, a filter on every socket, even if the socket is not in use by a telephone, because that will minimise impedance grunge.
By the way, can anyone tell me what ADSL stands for?
Asymmetric Digital Subscriber Line.
That's it. Thank you very much, Grace. And it's the most commonly...
Well, the old joke still does nothing.
Yes, possibly.
Well, I know CDMA stands for Consumers Don't Matter Anyway.
I got a question. Do your phones use the same little plug sockets as ours do in North America?
Yes, there are actually three different sockets. There's the RJ11, the RJ12, and the RJ45. RJ45 is used for networking. RJ12, I believe, is the small one that actually connects to the handset, to the phone, and then RJ11 is the slightly bigger one that you usually find on the end of modems. I'm not sure whether 11 and 12 are around the right way. There's a bit of conjecture about that. I'd need to look those up, and I'm just about to let go so that Scott can actually interject and say what he thinks. We also do have a flat plug, which is a PL something, 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 and you can convert those to the square RJ connectors with a little adapter that's worth about $2. Did you have anything to add to
Kerry,
that, Scott?
You don't know what a PL something 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 is. There's one, there's a calendar. Quick.
So I can bring my phones with me.
Yeah, they will work. Obviously, the ADSL systems are incompatible because we use the European standard, which runs at 64 kilobits per second rather than 56 kilobits per second. But if you have analog telephone equipment, it will work in Australia, and the central splitters will work in Australia. However, you will need a quad band or tri-band phone so that you'll be able to land on one of our UMTS networks. But Wikipedia will sort you out for that one.
Okay, so ADSL is currently the most commonly used DSL technology, and you've got different, with ADSL you've got different bandwidth capabilities in each of the directions. It's got a fast downstream speed, which is typically around 1.5 megabits per second. If we talk about downstream speeds, we're talking in the process of bringing your data from the server down to the end user. It's obviously good for people who are downloading large amounts of data, my husband Ray. but the upload rates of ADSL is slower, okay? So it's not so good if you're hosting, you know, large web servers or FTP servers where you've got a lot of, you know, upload-intensive information happening.
Oh, interestingly enough, just to be somebody who's different, I do have a symmetric connection, and mine is slow. It's 512 kilobits in both directions, and that means that you will get 50k a second out of my internet connection. And if the main QCAT site goes down, you can go and look at my backup mirror. So that's why I have a symmetric connection. But most people do download more than they upload, unless you're an avid torrenter, and we don't talk about that.
No, we don't talk about that. Okay, so we're just going to go a little bit into broadband a little bit further. It's obviously it's a technique we use to transmit and to receive multiple signals, and it does that using multiple frequency all within one cable. So it's a signaling method that uses a wide range of frequencies, can be further divided up into channels. So when we're talking about broadband in networking, it is describes a communication method. So you're getting more than one, or transmits two or more signals at the same time. We just cable ad infinitum. So when you've got cable modem, it connects your computer to the company that's cable company, and it uses the same coaxial cable that connects to your cable television if you've got cable TV.
Just to make a point here, coax that connects to your TV is 75 ohms. Coax that connects to your Ethernet is 50 ohms. You do not exchange one with the other. One is RG58, one is RG59. And if you've got RG62, that's actually 83 ohm coax, and it's used in ARCNET. You cannot use the coax for your cable television on your Ethernet. You will get away with it for short distances, but horrible things, TM, will happen over long distances, so don't do it. 50 ohm coax is also the coax that is used for CB radio and most RF equipment, whereas 75 is used for your television. Interestingly enough, and this has got nothing to do with anything that we're talking about today, 300 ohm TV tape, if run correctly, actually has better signal resistance characteristics than coaxial cable. It's just that coax is easier to install. So there you go.
Okay, so I have a question about that then.
Yeah, go.
How do you tell the difference between the cables that are connected to your TV and your internet inside your house then?
Well, actually, when I say connected to the TV and the internet, when you're using cable internet, the 75 ohm cable comes to your cable box, and then it's actually converted out to Ethernet. If you've actually got two cables, and one is for 10Base2 networking, which nobody hardly uses anymore, but I thought I'd mention it anyway, it's actually got the designations and the impedance written on the outside of the cable. So it'll actually say RG58, 50 ohm, and it'll have a... In fact, most cable labelling, if you get somebody to read it, if they can read the little letters off it, will actually give you the impedance of the cable, the thickness of the insulation, the thickness of the wire measured in AUG, the melting point of the plastic insulation, and the type of cable that it is.
Okay, well, I guess I haven't screwed up my cabling yet, because we haven't had any problems.
Well, you don't have 10Base2 networking. 10Base2 networking was popular in about 87 to about 99, and I wouldn't think you would have any network cards that have the ability to take a coax signal. So you're pretty safe, but when we were all starving students, there were people who thought that you could interchange the two bits of cable because nobody had enough for coax at $3 a meter. Until you found out, like me, that you could actually go down to the wholesale shop and get it at 83 cents a meter. But that's neither here nor there.
Okay, I just got confused about that. I thought you meant that the ones between my modem and the wall and the ones between my TV and the wall should be totally different cables. So, sorry about that.
That's okay, but at least you've learned something. And no, they don't need to be, because cable television does run on 75 ohm coax, and we actually use a form of frequency division multiplexing to separate the TV signals from the cable internet, so it all runs on the same cable.
Okay, just wanted to talk a little bit further about different types of broadband. There's another one called ISDN, In ISDN, you've got multiple channels, and they carry different types of services, so it's considered a type of broadband. So you can get carrying voice, video, and also data. Another type is satellite broadband. So if you can't get cable or DSL connections, you can get satellites. So you don't, with satellite, obviously, you don't need phone lines, cables, but you obviously do need a satellite dish. With satellite, your download speeds are around about 500 kilobits per second, and uploads are closer to your 56 kilobits per second. Obviously, it takes a little bit of time for the signal to get from this, you know, from the satellite dish to relay to your ISP, and then it has to get to the satellite. If you're in areas, though, where you might be out in the country or something, obviously, satellite is a great boon, because otherwise you wouldn't get it. Okay, voice over IP or VoIP carries your telephone calls over the data networks and also over the internet. With VoIP, you get the analog signals converted into voice and onto digital information, and it's then transferred via little packets, and it uses the existing IP network and gives you access to the public switch telephone network, or PSTN, you might have heard that. You are dependent on an internet connection, obviously, and obviously that's a problem if your internet goes down, so it is your chance to use VoIP. We're nearly at the end, folks, you'll be pleased to know. I know there's a lot in this module. All right, some of the things to keep in mind with your network. Obviously, networks need maintenance too. I guess the biggest thing with your network devices is overheating, so keeping them well ventilated, keeping dust off air filters and on your network devices, and keeping your network area you've got your networking equipment in is making sure it's nice and clean and free of dust. Also, if you're troubleshooting your network and it's a cable network, look at things like, have I kicked out a network cable? The real simple things are usually the first thing to have a look at when you
Has Geraldine forgotten to turn the switch back on?
Yeah, exactly.
I just had to put that one in. We had a situation the other day where one of our students, who will remain unnamed, was complaining about lack of internet access and lack of JAWS authorization. And when Geraldine had walked out of the room last time, she turned off the switch. And he didn't have any network connectivity because the switch wasn't turned on.
Yeah, well, that'll do it every time. Okay, so I know this has been a hugely long sort of module, and it's taken 2 weeks to get through, but it's a very important module, so I would advise you to go back over your notes, have a look, have another reread, and obviously make sure that you've got it in your brain, especially those different types of architectures and standards. They're very important, and they will be in your exam. So all right, any questions before I have some quick questions?
WiMAX is not an example of satellite broadband. WiMAX is a terrestrial or earthbound wireless technology. I don't know why everybody's excited about WiMAX. Is India going into WiMAX or something? Is everybody putting it in or something over there? It's not even ratified yet, so expect breakage. In fact, they're still fighting over who controls the bits of the spectrum and who's actually going to get which bit of the spectrum and exactly how fast we are going to go on WiMAX. So it really is a moving target. It should work eventually, but I'd say you're in the implementation phase. And if you were looking at mission-critical connectivity, I wouldn't be looking at WiMAX at this particular point in time. But then again, I'm not doing a network consultancy, so it's up to you.
Any other questions before I move on? All right, okay, I've got some questions for you on today's module, so get your chat windows open.
And if you get this quiz all correct, you'll win a new car. No, you won't.
Okay, question one. The internet is an example of what type of network? Is it A, a LAN, B, SAN, C, a WAN, or a D, a WLAN? We got one answer?
It is C, senora.
Everybody awake?
Does that include me?
That was Geraldine.
I just said, does that include me? Does everyone have to be awake, including me?
Yeah, because you're reading the quiz.
Okay, I'll better wake up. Okay, question two. What is the suggested maximum number of PCs in a peer-to-peer network? Is it A, 10, B, 25, C, 50, D, 100, or E, 1,221? What's up, Topes? Oh. Yeah, the door's shut. My dog's just having a growl at somebody. Killer, her name is. Killer. Yes, and it was A, it was 10. Well done, Jenny. Okay, question three. Which type of data transfer allows information to be sent and received at the same time? Is it A, full duplex, B, half duplex, C, multiplex, D, simplex? Oh, look at them go. Well done. Yes, it is full duplex. All right, we'll see if you've been listening to Kerry today. Which, not a decimal number, not that he went through this bit, I don't think. We went through it last week. is used to distinguish the network portion of an IP address from the host portion. Is it A, the default gateway, B, the MAC address, C, the physical address, or D, the subnet mask? Oh, they're all over the place, Kerry.
Grace is right.
Yes. It is D, the subnet mask. Yes.
I think I remember going, the subnet mask tells you which bits of the IP address are part of the network portion and which bits are part of the host portion. I think I remember going on like that at one particular point.
Well, you might as well have forgotten about it, Kerry.
Oh, okay.
No one was listening. Well, Grace was listening. Okay, yes, so it is the subnet mask. Okay, next question. Which suite of protocols is used to transmit data across the internet? Is it A, AppleTalk, B, ARP, C, DNS, D, IPX, SPX, or E, TCP/IP? And it is E, that's correct, TCP/IP. Okay, which cable type is a common choice for use on Ethernet networks? Is it A, thick coaxial, B, thin coaxial, C, STP, or D, UTP? Well done. Yes, it is UTP. Okay, next question. Which networking protocol translates a network name from your www.whateverit is
.cisco.com?
Oh, well, yeah. I wasn't going to say that. I thought that was advertising. Go on, Kerry.
Oh, www.qcat.org. Are you blind and staggering around in the dark when it comes to networking? Do you not know where those little connectors go into those hub sockets? QCAT.org has the course for you. One course will allow you to study networking and how you connect your machines together, while the other will teach you how to be screwy with a screwdriver and fix those nagging computer problems. Sorry, back to the quiz.
I think everybody was enjoying that. That's all right. All right, so which networking protocol translates your name, such as www.qcat.org, to a unique IP address? Is it A, a PIPA, D, ARP, C, DHCP, D, DNS, or E, proxy ARP? Hey, they've been listening, Kerry. It's DNS, that's correct. D. Okay, next question. Which protocol maps a known IP address to a MAC address on a local network? Is it A, ARP, B, DHCP, C, FTP, or D, RAP? And it is A, ARP. That's correct, for those that got that. Okay, all right, here's a little techie one. A technician wishes to update the network interface card driver for a computer. What is the best location for finding new drivers for the network interface card? Is it A, the installation media that came with the network interface card? B, Windows Update? C, the website for the manufacturer of the network interface card? D, the installation media for Windows? Well done, yes. Oh, somebody got it wrong. It's C, the website for the manufacturer of the card.
Can I just make a little point here, which might not occur to too many people, but if you're going to install a new network card driver, it would make sense to copy it down onto your local hard drive before running the installer in case you actually lose internet connectivity during the install if you install it off the file server. Just a point. Well, you just have this image of these people installing these network card drivers and losing network connectivity halfway through.
Okay, next question. What is the most commonly used DSL technology? Is it A, ADSL, B, HDSL, C, IDSL, or D, SDSL? Oh, I'm so glad you got that right. I would have taken out a gun and shot myself on that one. Someone asked, could they retreat? Could we retreat? That's not nice, Jenny. Oh, dear. All right, so that brings us to the end of today's module. So you will have a break for the next 2 weeks. Aren't you lucky?
And just one other point I want to reiterate, and I'm going to reiterate this every 2 weeks because everybody forgets. Yesterday, you all told me that one of you told me that exams wasn't available for Enable India. I'm not going to dob you in because I know who you are. ITE exams were not available for Enable India. Discovery exams were. So please be clear on which exams are not available. It didn't matter in this case because I went and activated the lot, but we do need to know whether you are referring to ITE or Discovery because they are handled by different people. My rant for the day.
Yes.
We can't have them fighting.
We do put them up for a week. Yesterday the week was up and I hadn't got around to doing it, so Kerry did that for me yesterday, which was very cool.
Yeah, so we just need to know ITE or Discovery, and it's really important. ITE or Discovery, ITE or Discovery, ITE or Discovery. Apart from that, enjoy your holidays. You do have 2 weeks off. We are available. Well, I'm available on Skype. Geraldine's got time off. Yeah, that's... Well, you didn't actually say ITE. I'd have to go back through and check my chat, but you didn't actually say ITE. And I wasn't actually going to dob you in. I was just going to let you be anonymous and slip into the shadows. Okay? So I wouldn't have owned up to that. But yeah, you've just got to say ITE or Discovery, and it's important to know
which
one.
Same with labs, please, when you're sending them through. You know, labs or worksheets, please put ITE or Discovery so that we don't go looking for, who's this for?
Yeah, and put it in the subject
line.
No,
it's important. We got told we were being picky.
Yeah, well, we are, and it's up to you whether you want. Yeah, it's up to you whether you want the marks or not. I mean, we don't really care. You send us the labs that are untagged, we won't bother marking them. No problem. No, seriously, we want like Discovery 1, Module 3 labs from Grace, for example, or Grace, you should push Discovery Lab 5.1.4, which then gives me absolutely nothing to complain about. So please,
She does the same for ITE too, so thank you, Grace, that's really good.
Right, so the rest of you now start labeling them like Grace, okay? No, but seriously, we really appreciate that. And
it just makes it easier, for us. Mm. Because if you can imagine, we've got, 130 students or something, or over 100 anyway, all throughout the world. So we're marking lots of worksheets and lots of labs. So, yeah, it just makes it easier for us to identify, do we need to look at this email or do we not? Okay, so that's good.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. It would be good to be able to just go, yeah, it's this lab, and then just fill in the thing on the marking sheet and give you the marks. It's good. But, I mean, obviously, I'm available on Skype. Geraldine will be off with a feeder up somewhere, chilling out, probably working on six uni assignments. But
exactly.
But yeah, I'll be around next week.
All at the same time.
Oh yeah, that's right. I'll be on next week, and I will be around, although I will be working on network infrastructure stuff, such as the remote bundle that you guys will be doing to do the discovery labs that involve you reconfiguring routers. And things, so we'll be doing that, but we'll also be available for if you have any questions or whatever, but it will also give us some time to actually sit down and mark the backlog of labs that I personally have, because I'm not quite as dedicated, or haven't been quite as dedicated as Geraldine, and I'd like to get on top of that backlog and mark those labs so that you can all stop emailing me and asking me about them.
Okay, so yeah, I'll be, obviously there'll be no IT lecture or no discovery lectures for 2 weeks, that's 2 weeks. If you send worksheets to me over the next 2 weeks, they may not get marked for the next 2 weeks, so depending what beach I'm sitting on. So bear with me. All right, so I guess that's probably all we need to cover. Anyone got any questions? Getting really interesting with ITE, and after we come back we're getting into security sort of things, so that's quite an interesting area. Okay, do a bit of, use the time to catch up, do a bit of revision, catch up on your labs, worksheets, and have a lovely break, and a happy Easter to you all.